Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Insider, brought to you, and I know this is going to freak you out, by Vanishing Ink. My guest today is a magician. Weird, eh? He does close-up, parlour, stage, TV consulting, touring shows, and happened to work on Dynamo's team for about 8 years. It's Harry De Cruz. Harry, how are you today?
Hello, I am good, thanks. Sweaty, which is a rarity it's a rare thing to happen in England, but hot and sweaty, but I'm good, and thank you for that lovely introduction.
Not at all. What's your magic origin story? You've got 19 seconds.
Oh, okay. The real one or the one I give the public?
No, let's do the real one.
Okay, the real one. A magician called Paul Megrim, who's also Colonel Custard, kids entertainer, saw him working at a furniture store when he'd just started his career in like a creche area, and fell in love with him. And then he ended up mentoring me throughout what I know, and sort of pushed me towards that performing side. And then I also studied TV as a sideline in case I couldn't do magic full time. And then that somehow took me into the TV world, which then went back into the world of magic. And then they all sort of collided.
And I think you were on time there as well. That's good. Okay. So then, Dynamo, you worked with him for about 8 years, is that right?
Yeah.
And you started, I think this is fair, but you started off quite low down the food chain with the production and ended up quite high up. Tell us about that journey.
Yeah, it did happen. Yeah, I didn't ever plan to work, do that kind of role in magic. I always wanted to perform, and I was sort of told quite rightly, think about a second career in case you couldn't do magic full time. And the thing I loved at the time was watching behind the scenes of like TV shows and films. I wanted to become David Attenborough's cameraman. I liked the idea of sitting in a tree for 6 months waiting for a monkey to appear or something. And so I studied television at college, and I worked on like Britain's Got Talent and X Factor as a runner, as a T-boy. And then a number of magicians through a chain of people put me in touch with the Dynamo Magic team, who were looking for a runner at the time. And so I ended up becoming a runner for the Magic team, which were at the time was like Daniel Garcia and Blake Voigt and Rico de la Vega and Kayla Morelli and Alex Van Gaal. So amazing names. And I was just going out and getting props for them because it was useful to have a runner who knew a little bit about magic. Sure. So they knew what Invisible Thread was, or if I couldn't find it from one magic shop to get another one, or why we might need it. So I started with them and then just stuck around, really. Dynamo and his manager Dan, I was junior, so I was cheap, right? Like, that's why I stuck around. It wasn't and I sort of learned via osmosis with other consultants coming in. So we brought other consultants in, and then I learned how to maybe do something with them, and then I was the sort of constant, which meant that I would end up sort of, my role would change a little bit. So now I've worked with the consultants, and eventually I'd sort of hire the consultants or also be in the writing room a little bit. And eventually, I ended up sort of heading up the team. So everything he did that involved magic, whether it was a product or a live tour or something, I would be across the whole project. So from the writing to the building to the filming to the editing. So ended up becoming sort of quite a big role, which I never expected it to become that role. I never expected my world of magic and TV to collide, but also never expected it to be of that scale, if that
sure.
means, you know.
Yeah. So can you talk us through, if you can remember, how you ingratiated yourself into the writer's room? Because that must have been quite an important first step where somebody said, and what do you think, Harry? And you came up with a good idea, or you offered a line or a solution to a problem. How did that, did you just sit down and not leave until, I mean, what was it, what happened?
That's a really good question. I think it was so gradual, I can't pinpoint an answer.
Okay.
Like, in the same way, it's really tough. The whole process with all the Dynamo stuff is so collaborative. It's really hard sometimes to say, like, that was me, because it really comes from all directions and it evolves. I think, as I said, I sort of learned via osmosis with other people. So maybe I learned something to do with a thread reel from Kaelin at some point. So then when Kaelin's not there, I can always be like, oh, how about this thing? So I'm always just sort of learning from other people and sort of passing it through myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that just sort of grew.
Just being helpful then, really.
Yeah. And then I think the big turning moment happened for the live tour, the big arena tour he did. Because that was the core team, which was very small. It was myself, Dynamo, and Dan. And then we bought in other people. And so I was kind of like the almost note taker, I guess, in some ways at that point, right? Or like, you know, we had like Luke Jermaine and Paul Keeve come in, and I would sort of facilitate what they needed. And so, yeah, just sort of it built, sort of, the role, it's hard to describe what the role was because it formed so gradually it's hard to sort of pinpoint exactly what it was.
What do you think was the most challenging bit of filming or production, if the live shows were more challenging than the filming? What was the most challenging bit that you did?
There's two things, one filming, one live. The filming, the term we always used to use was the stars have to align. I think what people don't realize with filming is like how much has to happen for it to be a perfect workable clip for TV. Like, not only has the trick got to work, the performer's got to be on form, the reaction has to be right, the camera has to catch the reaction and the trick.
Right.
How do you film a trick that maybe is angly for both the spectator and the camera at the same time? Otherwise, you've got to do pick-up shots and those kind of things, which we fell out of love with. I think the last series we did, the one I headed up, we did pretty much with only one camera in one take. There was a second camera there just in case, because we fell out of love with those. It started to feel dirty. It started to feel, I think, magicians saw it, but I think the public started to feel suspicion. And so the stars have got to align. So I think that's kind of the thing that people don't understand, or maybe it was the hardest, is, and how do you do your best to make them all line up? Like, one of the things we worked out, I'm not hopefully giving any trade secrets away, but like, if you wanted a jumpy reaction, what, like, okay, make the first few tricks really kind of calm and quiet, so therefore that's going to be a bigger step. Or if it's going to be gory, for example, like, get them into that state of mind first, or, you know, prep them as well. It was a big kind of part. Prep them in the sense of like, not stew.
Not pre-show. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Get into the right state of mind. Sure. Make it more, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, just like a warm-up man at a TV show. He would get them to be happy and clapping and loud and etc.
Yeah, so the more you can do that, the more those stars will align, and, you know, the better you get. And TV's hard because of the turnout rate, the amount you have to film. Like, if you had 25 tricks an episode to make the TV show, there you filmed 40, maybe. You then built, let's say, 60 and tested them. You came up with 100, right? You came up with 100, and then it got narrowed down. And therefore, you do that across four episodes. That's 400 tricks to create, and then did it, and all this sort of boiled down. So the time frame you have to build it, rehearse it, create it, and film it, it's just so tight. Like, it's so difficult for people. What people don't realize is how much has to go into it.
I'm rambling
a lot.
Yeah, no. Challenging the challenging situation from filming and from live.
The other thing, well, I think it's a proud moment was.
I've got the proud question later. You can't do the proud one now. I want challenging now.
All right, we'll come back to it later. Yeah, probably works better for the proud. We'll come back to it. Stick around.
There you go. It's a teaser. We're just going to this ad break. Vanishing Ink. We sell magic. It's great. Get your magic from Vanishing Ink. Okay, back to the podcast with Harry De Cruz. What do you think, and you have kind of touched on it, but I'm going to ask you directly, what do you think when people dismiss TV magic as editing or setup or stooges or that kind of thing? Does it frustrate you? Are you used to it now? How do you react? What do you feel?
Certainly used to it. I think the introduction of Zoom magic and online magic has made people realize. I think they've gone like, oh, you can't misdirect a camera. You can't do a top change on camera because you see it. And so we go, oh, that's probably why they cut to a reaction, for example. Or when we went onto Zoom and got online shows, we had a new place to perform magic, right? It was new. It was almost as if someone had said, we've invented this thing called stage. It's got wings, lights, trap doors. You can use all these things. It'd be mad not to use them. So we started creating magic for with opportunities that uses tech, uses, you know, the what's off screen and uses whatever you need and perspective and things. And that's fine to magicians.
Yeah.
Then why is it not okay for TV? Just because you're not doing it.
Yeah.
Right? Just because, and I think people have learned from that is it's a new place to perform magic, therefore has new
acceptable cheating,
yeah. new possibilities,
right?
More methods, different methods,
yeah.
No, so I think fair. that's a huge part.
Okay, this question is going to come as a real shock. Which segment that you were involved in with Dynamo were you most proud of?
I haven't got this in tip of my tongue. When the live show was announced, as with most live shows, you come up with a name first. They came up with Seeing is Believing. And the idea was, you've seen it on TV, we're going to do it for you live.
Yeah.
Which meant there was a number of effects that he was known for we had to do live. And one of them was Phone and Bottle, which had, I'd say, a TV method. Don't mean that in a dodgy way.
Definitely. TV method is fair. Yeah.
It's like saying we had a close-up method, we used to take it to stage, or stage method, take it to TV, or whatever. And so taking that, which was like his most iconic trick, but I think one of the most iconic tricks in the country, like you were at close-up gigs, people were asking you, can you put a phone in the bottle?
Yes.
So being part of, like, not just being, not claiming any specific involvement, but just being part of a team that brought that trick to life, I think, you know, like, if you get to say, I worked on Copperfield Statue of Liberty, you can't not be like, you know, I got to work on Dynamo's Phone in the Bottle for a live show, which... The end result, I thought, was really powerful. They walked away with their genuine phone inside a bottle, like, examinable. And I live in the moment. Someone bought onto stage with their phone.
You stepped out from behind the camera and bought shows to Edinburgh. Tell us about that process.
Yeah. Well, that was a bit of a dream for me. Partially because a lot of the magicians I've always... loved or grew up with around me, like I started I was a sort of techie kind of stage manager for Young and Strange when I was like 15. So I'd be literally in the back of the van driving the country helping their illusion, and they did the Fringe, and so seeing them was like, I want to do what they're doing,
right.
Also, what's funny about that is they are, when I worked for them, they were 28, which is the age I am now. And I used to think they were adults when they were doing it. Like, they've got this big illusion show. They're touring the country. And now I go, my age? Like, they still had no... There's no way they knew what they were doing. We're all still just figuring it out at this age. So that was quite... So looking back at that, it's quite funny. But also, I've always loved stand-up comedy. I might love it more than magic. Certainly as a viewer or maybe out of respect. I think I respect it more. And that's, I think, because I identified or I related to stand-ups more than magicians. Like, I'm 14 and a guy walks on stage in a t-shirt and just starts chatting with us. Yeah. Or a guy walks on stage in a suit, has props I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And also, difference as well, the comedian is saying something that feels real and feels honest. And I know, you know straight away, well, that's a script. And so I just never related to magicians. And so I loved The Fringe for that purpose too. Like, I would see just as much a comedy as I would magic. And so it was a dream to go up there. And then I did in 2018 with a show. And I learned, I luckily got advice from all my friends who had previously done it, which therefore meant it went well. I learned from their mistakes. They all gave me
their advice. Give us a top three don't do this things for Edinburgh.
You have to invest in your... Well, okay, so
or do is, this, whatever. Yeah, whichever way around you want to answer.
Go up there with a name. So know exactly what you want out of it. Exactly. And therefore, any money you don't make, which is likely you won't make money, is now an investment to that thing.
Okay.
So let's say you make a three
grand
loss.
Agent or get
what? Yeah, exactly. I went up there to get stage time,
mm-hmm.
and work in material. So therefore, if I made any losses, I would go, oh, it cost me $3,000 to get that. And sure. So that's one thing. And so and therefore it's not a loss. Therefore it's an investment into yourself, and you don't consider it like that. As long as you achieve the thing you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, otherwise, yeah. Otherwise it is a loss. Yeah. make it an achievable goal.
Top tip.
Yeah, the money that invest in yourself. So like the flyer, like for example, you're paying £10 an hour for flyers. Okay. So give for 2 hours, £20. They should pay for themselves. So therefore, go and get 5 or 6 of them, right? Which it sounds mad to be spending £100 a day, and therefore that's £2,500 on flyers for the month, which sounds scary, but they will pay for themselves. And you know, and the bigger the audience, the big. Oh, I did free fringe shows as well, so they had to pay via donations at the end. Mm-hmm. And so, the bigger the show, the bigger the audience, the bigger the atmosphere, the more mm-hmm. money I got, and therefore they pay for themselves. So it sounds scary, but trust in that formula.
Yeah,
I think as long as you've got good flyers. And then the third bit of advice would be who that came from, which is get a director. So I had Edward Hilson, who is incredible, and he directed James Friedman's mm-hmm. Show. He's directed his own and many others, and he's Magic Circle triple champion. He's an incredible person. But he had that experience from doing it, but also that right eye. So he gave me, and he'd done it before as well, so he gave me not just advice for the fringe, like get flyers, but also directorial advice too. And that was really useful. And I treated, and because of him, I treated it like, oh, fourth tip.
Okay.
Treat it like
bonus tip.
Treat it like a job. Like I took time off Dynamo to go do it. So I had to treat, you know, I went from one job to another, but film it every time, get your notes, watch it back, like spend your time working. That's the 1 year I've been where I saw the least amount of shows, and I was there for the whole month. I saw more shows when I went up for 3 days than I ever, you know, in 2017 than I ever saw over the whole month, because I was treating it like a job and spent some time into it. So like, I think that's, you can go up there for a piss up, but
sure,
you know, you're not going to be as, it'd be harder to make your money back, it'd be harder to work for the show. So
yeah. And then when your time with Dynamo was coming to an end, I saw you at the session 2020 in January, and you told me that you'd quit, and you were quite excited about the opportunities ahead, and then a global pandemic happened. Perfect timing to cruise.
What a world ahead of me to go work in events, eh?
what did you do, man?
Well, should we get quite bleak?
Yeah.
I'm going to go personal here, but quit my job. Lost all future work. Girlfriend broke up, or 4 years broke up with me, which therefore meant I couldn't have the flat we lived in, and no work. Like, it was like, all right, okay, it was rock bottom.
Game over, yeah.
Yeah, it was. But I have the best friends around me who just supported me huge, and they made me realize, actually, rock bottom is great because you can do anything you want from here. You can start up
interesting
fresh.
Yeah.
So at one point I was like, well, why do I choose magic? Is there anything else I want to do? Is there anything else that interests me more? Go to uni, go live in a different country. And so I really got to examine myself, which was really a really interesting place to be when you have nothing, right? No money either, right? It all went. And so that was an interesting place to be, and I still chose magic, bizarrely. Like, what a mad world.
The whole world is your oyster. No, yeah. I like magic.
Yeah, I just like it. Yeah, we're all geeks. Like, there's no hiding it. No matter how cool you are, how many tattoos you are, you're still into magic. Like being the best looking in the Burns unit. Like, you're still a magician. what did I do? So, things just came up. It was amazing. So friends supported me massively and put my name out there, but things just came up in the right sort of people. I think the Dynamo name helped, obviously, sure. Right? Like, oh, he's now free. He's available, because I was full time with him for 8 years. So that was an interesting point. But also, went and worked in a market selling phone decks. I went and worked in Brick Lane Market. So I just like grafted and sort of kept performing and just sort of took every opportunity, really. And then it then became the best thing that ever happened to me, because I ended up in a show. It feels weird to say this without you asking me.
Tell us about Champions of Magic and Wonderville. That's here. I've got that is the next question. That legitimately, promise.
What a great next segue. Question. Well, it feels I should have allowed you to say that rather than me bringing it up. But like, it links.
So I'll edit it. It's fine. It'll be really smooth. So De Cruz, tell us about Champions of Magic and Wonderville.
Oh, that's what you think. It's the best thing to come out of the pandemic. So yeah, like it ended up, the opportunities opened up for these. Also, with the, and now I'm going to ruin your editing.
I'm not going to edit it. It's staying totally like this.
Because consultancy stuff. There were certain things that opened up for other people. Like more people had TV opportunities or online shows. Like I worked with Will Houston and Steve Thompson on their Video Chat Magic project, which we then did on The Vanishing Ink and the book. And so I got to work on that, which that would have come up if it wasn't for the pandemic. So just things opened up, which was amazing. I think magicians really adapted well to the online space. Like I think magic more than any other art form worked best.
Yeah.
You know, comedians were doing on Zoom shows. You know, I just watch a Netflix special, I reckon. Like, yeah. But things opened up. And so there was a sort of, not campaign, but a thing that happened here in London Theatre, which is companies had their theatres empty. So they gave them to young producers and directors to put on their first West End show for a small thing. It was cheaper for them to run a show at a loss than have an empty theatre.
Sure.
And so shows got put on, and one of them was a show called Wonderville, which was a producer who knew Chris Cox. And Chris put forward the idea of how would we do a multi-man kind of multi-person. I'm so sorry.
It's all right.
I'm now even more of a dick for doing that. Oh, Jesus. Cancelled. A multi-act show, and I was fortunate enough to be a guest act in that show. And that just, I got to perform in the West End, which is an absolute dream, right? And also, it was at the Harry Potter Theatre,
right?
Which is, I'm always being compared with a British magician. I usually wear glasses, like, all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of Harry Potter jokes, a lot of Prince Harry jokes, because I was at the Palace and all those kind of things. And like, it was just the dream come true opportunity. And then, because I'd done that, it was proof that I could do a stage show. And then Champions of Magic, Alex Jarrett, the producer and director of that, had an opportunity where he needed a second set of people to go to Saudi Arabia for a run of shows. And I was in that, and I got to work with Darcy Oak, Josephine Lee, Patrick Kuhn, and Youngmin Kim. And like, that was a hell of a lineup. Like, just dream jobs arose from the pandemic, because kind of different opportunities. But also what's weird is that I don't know what's normal now, because I've never been freelance outside of a pandemic. So I don't know if now is busy or not. Like, right. This is all new for me. I'm learning as I go. Like, I feel, even I've been gigging since I was like 10, I don't actually know what the normal freelance world of gigging is like. Yeah. Is this a normal amount of inquiries or not? I don't know. It's just all very new for me. It's just,
exciting though.
Yeah, very fun.
And at the session in July, you did a show that didn't involve any magic tricks at all. And the audience, including me, lapped it up. Can you describe that show for the listeners and then talk about how you created it?
Yeah. So the act is basically loads of silly skills and party tricks. So think... well, actually, you'll understand how, once I say how I created it, you'll understand what it became. James Friedman, so when I came to write my Edinburgh show, I did some sessions with James Friedman, and he was just like, who do you like? Tell me which magicians you like. Let's look at what, and then we'll analyse why you like them. And it came up with people like Darren Brown, Jonathan Goodwin, Aaron Crowe, James Friedman himself, and a number of names like that, Charlie Fry. And what I realised was the link between all of those is that they portray skill. They use magic as secret method, which is beautiful, like even more satisfying, portraying a skill. So I was like, oh, I wonder if I could just do this. And so I had a show idea. My first ever Edinburgh preview was, I'm going to show you a 10-minute magic act. But to do that, I'm going to show you everything I had to learn to be able to do this act. And so it was like dexterity and memory and skill and that kind of stuff and feel. And I did that preview and it was awful. It was so bad. I actually ended the show still stuck in handcuffs. I couldn't escape them. I couldn't pick them. Like, it was a video of me going like, all right, well, James Friedman's in the audience and he's going to have to come and pick these because I genuinely can't. It was awful. But the main review of it was, the last 10 minutes, that magic act was awful. The interesting thing was the skills.
Right.
So talk about that more. And then that became I sort of loosened it up even more and so I did sillier skills, sillier things. And it felt quite braggy to say I'm skillful. Like, it's not British and self-deprecating to be like, hey, the man of 1,000 skills. So reframing it as party tricks is what happens. And so now it's like, hey, here are all these silly party tricks or skills and party tricks I've learned along the way of being a magician, like improving my memory. And it became much friendlier, right. Much more like, let's just try this. And so some of the things I'll do is I'll get people out of the audience, they'll try it. So one of the things is, like, it was a TikTok trend. We're putting whipped cream in the back of your hand, flicking it in the air and catching it in your mouth. And so like, all right, you come on stage, let's try it. And it's always mayhem. So that's where that came from. And it became from like, yeah, loving Derren Brown being slapped and counting the buttons, like, or Charlie Fry being able to balance a newspaper on his face. Like, just all those quirky skills I fell in love with. So I sort of balanced the silly things with hopefully a bigger piece of memory. But if you watch it as a magician, you'd be like, ow, there's a method to that.
Uh-huh.
So that's where that came from. But the challenge I've got now is how I... do I stick with only becoming that guy? Or do I try and fuse magic back into it all together? Or like,
is it an either or?
I don't, yeah, it's interesting. If you see me in close up, I'm the same person, but doing very different stuff to what I'm doing on stage. So I'm in this kind of weird midpoint of what I, you know, where I, because also magic, a magician is bookable because you know what you're getting. Uh-huh. I'm booking a magician to do my, to host this event show. Whereas you're not booking a party trick boy to like, so I'm that now I'm trying to like, how do I reframe? So I'm in this really interesting kind of position or point in my career or life where I'm like trying to find how to actually market it now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because there's an education element that isn't needed with a juggler or a singer or a dancer. It's like nobody's seen this. Because when I saw it, I thought, oh, this is really smart because this can work on cruise ships, this can work on theatres, this can work in cabaret, this could work anywhere. You don't, with the LUT of it, you wouldn't even need English. You can just see the things and enjoy it. But I hadn't realised that nobody knows what it is.
Yeah, if it's original, then if it's new, then... you have to also educate them on it as well.
Yeah.
The closest I can get to is do you remember Boy with Tape on His Face?
Sure.
Tape Face?
Yeah.
It's silly party tricks of props. As close as I get to it. And I think that he would have had going through this now would be interesting for him going like, well, I'm a mime, but I'm not a mime. I'm a stand-up comedian, but I'm not talking. I'm a prop comic, but not quite, like... how do you educate the audience on it? I'm finding that really interesting at the moment to try and market myself as new, but not new. So,
yeah, no, well, that's an interesting challenge. That's an interesting challenge. Did you miss not doing magic and doing that when you were on stage, or was it a refreshing change?
Really refreshing. I'm not scared. There's nothing to go. There's very little to go wrong. I'm not scared. There's very little method to hide.
Yeah.
It allows me to be more like stand-up, which I said I prefer. Like, hey, let's just have some fun and be silly. Let's have a chat. So it's really refreshing. There's certainly, I come across tricks sometime where I'm like, that is a beautiful trick, smart method, or brilliant presentation. Like, I can't do it. It doesn't fit me, which is really gutting sometimes. Yeah. But then I guess I could maybe work on it as a consultancy thing with someone else, give it to someone else.
Sure.
But it's like gut, you know, like sometimes it's gutting to be like, oh, I wish I could do that routine. It's just not me.
Yeah.
But it does allow me to have space to relax on stage, which I think is helping me improve as a performer, because I'm not having to worry and think about what can go wrong.
You just did look like you were having fun for an hour or however long the set was.
Also, if it goes wrong, well, it's a skill, so it's not always perfect.
Yeah.
If you're one off, that's fine.
Yeah.
Because
you're not
saying I'm perfect. Yeah. So I quite like that.
We're out of time, De Cruz. We always end the show with four quick fire questions. Are you ready?
Yes.
Favourite pizza topping?
I like pesto.
Okay. There's no judgment.
whoa.
No judgment. No judgment. No judgment.
It goes on other things, but like, it's always nice to get that. I drink it from, I eat it from a jar. Carry on.
Favourite person or people who make music?
Not really into music, but the person I've always listened to from a kid growing up, so now he's still a comedian, is Tim Minchin.
Favourite movie?
Casino Royale.
Favourite? Oh no, we've done all the favourites. Who would you rather fight? A giant Andy Gladwin or 100 tiny Josh Jays?
I've heard this question a lot. I think this question implies that we could all take Gladwin now, but we couldn't if he was big, or none of us could take Josh now, but maybe we could if there was 100 small ones of him.
You have to actually give this thought. That's
yeah. Well, because every time I've listened to it, I've gone like, well, what's my theory is I would, because I'm reading talk about tricks every day. I'm reminded how smart Josh is, and I think 100 of those little brains would still be scary. So I'm going to try and take one Andy Gladwin massive brain.
Harry De Cruz, thank you very much indeed for giving us your time this afternoon. I'd hope you don't suffer too much in the heat, and I will see you very soon indeed.
Thank you very much. Lots of love. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Pleasure. Bye-bye. Boom.
That was fun.
Stop.